Surely every child and everyone who once was a child has heard of Dr. Seuss. But how many know that the creator of so many wonderful rhymes and fantastic tales was once a political cartoonist and satirist as well, and that one of his primary subjects was the Second World War and its major participants? Well, listen up as Talking History's Eileen Dugan takes on that subject in this week's interview.
At first glance, it looks like another Dr. Seuss drawing. The mother, with that typical Dr. Seuss self-satisfied smile, eyes closed, chin up, is reading a bedtime story to a very Seussian boy and girl as a Seussian cat peers from behind the sofa. But why does the mother have America First emblazoned on her chest? And why is the storybook Adolf the Wolf with the swastika on its spine? We understand the perplexed faces of the children and the cat when we read the caption's drawing. And the wolf chewed up the children and spit out their bones? But those were foreign children, and it really doesn't matter. This is Dr. Seuss? In 1941 it was. Joining us today to explore the wartime drawings of Dr. Seuss is Dr. Richard Meinier, professor of history at the University of Massachusetts Amherst. Dr. Meinier is a specialist in Japanese history during World War II and is the author of the recent Dr. Seuss Goes to War, the World War II editorial cartoons of Theodore Seuss Geisel. Welcome, Dr. Meinier.
Thank you.
Where did these cartoons that you found originally appear?
All of them appeared first and only in a New York newspaper, fairly small circulation, called PM. It was on the left and didn't have a large circulation even in New York and very little outside of New York. But some important people were behind it and read it. And an awful lot of the leading lights of American journalism did a tour of duty on PM.
And were you surprised to find Dr. Seuss's drawings in a paper like this?
Well, I was taken aback, to say the least. You described the one cartoon that a lot of people have fallen in love with. I've fallen in love with a lot more than one, but I've shown these sometimes in my class with the Dr. Seuss signature covered up and asked the kids to try to identify who the author, the artist is. And when you know it's Dr. Seuss, it's, as you say, these are absolute, clearly Dr. Seuss characters, but the political content is such a surprise. It doesn't fit with our normal image of Dr. Seuss, and that, for me, it seems to me to be a great opportunity. It opens up a whole door, window into the political side of Dr. Seuss, and I found that fascinating.
What do you find in the content that's so surprising?
Well, he is a highly sophisticated, highly involved left intellectual in the 1930s. He can be very harsh on people he considers domestic enemies, among them Charles Lindbergh and the America First movement. The cartoon you described, the woman has America First across her sweater, and this was a group that was trying to keep the United States out of the war in Europe. And as such, Dr. Seuss and PM took America First as a major enemy.
And why Lindbergh?
Well, Lindbergh was, of course, the great national hero for his first solo flight across the Atlantic in 1927. But in 1941, he became the chief spokesman for the America First movement. And it was then that both PM and Dr. Seuss leveled their sights at him.
And what was it about the America First Party that Seuss was so opposed to?
Several things. He was committed. Dr. Seuss did these cartoons in 1941 and 42. So it's the year before Pearl Harbor, calendar year before, and the calendar year after. But long before overt American involvement in World War II, Dr. Seuss was convinced that the United States had to get involved. And he thought that for a couple of reasons. He had traveled in Europe, and his first cartoon is a is poking fun at one of the chief spokesmen for Mussolini's fascist government. But beyond general opposition to fascism, Dr. Seuss was also very strong on the issue of anti-Semitism. And I think this is unusual for newspapers in the 1940s to be, mainstream newspapers at least, to be as upfront in attacking anti-Semitism as PM was and Dr. Seuss was. But he charges Hitler with anti-Semitism and links the anti-Semitism of Hitler with what he sees as the anti-Semitism of Americans who either supported Hitler or were not willing or not interested in getting into the war in Europe.
How would you describe Dr. Seuss's Hitler?
Dr. Seuss's Hitler, it's a fascinating figure, and it's caused me some puzzlement. He draws Hitler with his eyes closed and his chin up in the air. He has his hair brushed to one side. He has a brushed mustache. It's kind of a dapper, not quite debonair maybe, but hardly heavyweight figure. And he puts that face on a human Hitler, and he puts it on dachshunds, and he puts it on the snake, and he puts it on all kinds of animals. But it may be the Hitler that Dr. Seuss saw in 1941 and 42, looking back from the year 2000 and the current awareness of the European Holocaust and Hitler's leading role in the death of European Jewry. It seems less than vicious. Dr. Seuss was more cruel, more biting in his depictions of the French collaborationist leader Laval than he was with Hitler.
There was one drawing that had Hitler as a sort of artiste in his great creation. Could you describe that?
This is Hitler as sculptor?
Yes.
Yes. Wonderful cartoon. Hitler was a failed artist, and this is Dr. Seuss drew just after Pearl Harbor. Hitler, the sculptor, is showing off his new statue of Generalissimo Hitler, this huge equestrian military statue. So Hitler is the sculptor. Hitler is also the figure on top of the horse. And at the base of the statue is a mermaid, also with Hitler's face. At the top of the statue are two angels who are putting a helmet over Hitler's, the equestrian statue's head. They also have Hitler's face, so that's five Hitler faces. And beyond that, the horse on which Hitler is sitting, the sculpted horse, has a Hitler mustache and Hitler eyes and Hitler hair. And the bird on the shield that Hitler is holding has Hitler's eyes and Hitler's mustache and Hitler's hair. Stunning. So seven Hitler faces, eight in fact, in this one cartoon, which kind of epitomizes this view of Dr. Seuss's view of Hitler.
And of course, as America entered World War II, how did he begin to depict the Japanese?
That's a very different matter entirely, and it goes back, I think, in part to Dr. Seuss's lack of contact with Japanese in particular, but I think Asians of any nationality. Dr. Seuss's four grandparents were all born in Germany, and he had traveled in Europe. He spoke German in church school as a kid. So he had a sophistication on the German side that he doesn't have on the Japanese side, and he has only one representative of Japan, and that is pure stereotype. Pig-like nose, mustache, thick glasses, slant eyes, prominent teeth. It's not the emperor, it's not Tojo, it's not any historical figure. And that's basically his representation of Japan, unfortunate to say the least.
So are we right to see racist overtones in these images?
Oh, I think very definitely. On the Japan, his images of Japan and the one cartoon he did of Japanese Americans just before the Roosevelt administration decided to round all Japanese Americans on the coast and put them in relocation camps, internment centers, concentration camps. The language is important here. And his cartoon is basically saying round them up and throw away the key. This is in stark contrast to, as I said, he was very upfront and very enlightened on his attack on anti-Semitism. He was very good on anti-black racism. He's got several cartoons pillaring white attitudes toward blacks and urging equal treatment in employment, for example. And he's got a couple of cartoons calling explicitly for an end to American racism, not simply racism abroad, but American racism. And yet, at the same time, he does have this significant blind spot when it comes to both Japanese and Americans of Japanese descent.
You mentioned his cartoons dealing with racism and treatment of blacks. Can you describe one of those cartoons?
Well, one of the cartoons shows a war industrialist playing on an organ, and Uncle Sam is tapping him on the shoulder to straighten him out, and the caption says, "Listen, maestro, if you want to get real harmony, use the black keys as well as the white." And you look at the organ, and the black keys are festooned with cobwebs, so they clearly haven't been used. It's kind of an early version of Paul McCartney and Stevie Wonder and Ebony and Ivory. Use both black and white to work together. That cartoon we ran it in the University of Massachusetts staff bulletin here last fall, and very quickly I got a call from a colleague of mine who said that he remembered growing up in Pittsburgh, his mother telling them repeatedly how she had tried to get war work in Pittsburgh and couldn't because she was black.
How does the style of Dr. Seuss's drawings in this period echo his more famous work in children's books?
Well, you can turn this thing into looking at these cartoons. There are 200 of these cartoons in the book and 400 total. And you can turn it into kind of a game of find the Grinch and find Horton. And he had done, before these cartoons, four children's books beginning in 1937 with To Think That I Saw It on Mulberry Street. And some of the figures from those books, Horton Hatches the Egg, was just before the war. Horton shows up here. And similarly, you can go from these cartoons to later stuff. The one example there's a cartoon attacking dawdling producers for not working fast enough. And the dawdling producers, Dr. Seuss draws as turtles. And there's a tower of turtles, except it's a double tower, and this caption says you can't build a V for victory out of turtles. Now, that's a direct antecedent of the Yertle the Turtle story, which is 1951 and then published finally as a book later in the 1950s. Yertle the Turtle and the Tower of Turtles and the fall of that tower when Mac, the turtle at the bottom, burps. I hadn't, I'd read that Yertle the Turtle to our kids any number of times. And I was astonished to read in an interview that Dr. Seuss gave that Yertle the Turtle, when Dr. Seuss first drew him, had a Hitler mustache.
Oh, my.
Yertle the Turtle is Hitler, the wartime dictators.
And perhaps even the Cat in the Hat's hat is in these cartoons?
Yes, Art Spiegelman, the mouse cartoonist who author who wrote an introduction to the books, makes that connection with the Cat in the Hat. Cat in the Hat is the late, is 1958, and that's kind of Dr. Seuss's breakthrough book into the stratospheric heights of American publishing. And yes, there are distinct similarities, fascinating to think of, to follow all the... we need an annotated edition now of all of Dr. Seuss's works.
And we have only a moment remaining, but can you describe for us just one more Dr. Seuss cartoon that you found interesting from this period?
We've hit one Hitler one. Let me go to a second Hitler one, and this shows Hitler as a dairy farmer at the Consolidated World Dairy, a Hitler proprietor, and he is standing in the middle of a cow. That seems funny to say, but the cow, with a big smile on its face, has a dozen or so hindquarters. So there are, the cow stretches in a half circle around Hitler, and each of those hindquarters, the first one says France, then Czechoslovakia, then Poland, Norway, all of occupied Europe, and the last one, instead of a name after Austria, has a question mark. Who is next? The caption, the head eats, the rest gets milked. Dr. Seuss's view of occupied Europe, and this is from before overt American involvement. So again, his interest in urging Americans to get into the war in Europe.
All right, well, thank you very much.
Thank you.
We have been talking with Dr. Richard Meinier, professor of history at the University of Massachusetts Amherst, and author of the recent Dr. Seuss Goes to War, The World War II Editorial Cartoons of Theodore Seuss Geisel.
From the Who's in Whoville to that grouchy old Grinch, Yertle the Turtle's got his friends in a pinch. Our friend Horton, who did hear a who, for the infinitely famous Thing One and Thing Two.